This podcast is offered by the San Francisco Zen Center on the web at sfzc.org. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So thank you to those listening from home, too. You may have made the right call. And yet it's so beautiful to be here together in our bodies, with each other's bodies. The feeling of this room, the sound, the light, the sensation, everything welcome, everything included. Totally intimate. So, as you all know, this weekend is so-called Independence Day. Around San Francisco Zen Center, we like to call it Interdependence Day. But anyway, it's a day, a holiday, and as some in the Sangha have invited, a time of reflection on being in this country. And I thought I would share a few thoughts about that this morning to honor July 4th, the coldest day of the summer, which is just as it should be here at Green Gulch. These sunny days recently, you know, are a little creepy and not so good for the lettuce. This is how it should be here. You should need sweaters in the summer at Green Gulch, so things feel right when it's cold. So thinking about this holiday, this quote came up from Suzuki Roshi. And quotes always come up in my mind from Suzuki Roshi, our founder of San Francisco Zen Center. As many of you know who hear me talk, Suzuki Roshi's teaching is just very inspiring to me. I feel that what he did in founding these centers and transplanting this lineage of American Zen that's totally true and authentic to the Japanese and Chinese and Indian ancestry, and yet is uniquely and deeply American also, that he had that together with the Sangha, that he understood and could feel his way into something new that was true to the old, I find very beautiful and inspiring. And so when day after day I bring up, you know, Suzuki Roshi says, I know some people find it tiresome. Sometimes somebody here in this room who knew Suzuki Roshi says, could you just give it a rest about Suzuki Roshi? And my son yesterday said to me, I think it's time for you to get a new muse. But I think I have a few more decades, you know, this work of Suzuki Roshi's teachings that's been important to me, motivating project for me to continue to kind of read through his teachings and see what more can be edited and shared. So anyway, Suzuki Roshi is always coming to mind, not because he was perfect or some supernatural or godlike being, but just because his warm heart and open presence is the core thread that this place is trying to preserve and nourish and care for. So the line that came to mind was, we do not practice in order to achieve something mentally or spiritually special. We practice just so that we can be good citizens. Here's the full quote. There is no need for us to be sages. If we can just be good citizens, that's enough. If we can be good American citizens, then I think we will not have any more war. If we are too good, we will have to fight. But if we are just good, common citizens, there will be no need to fight. This point is very important for us. Our practice should be very ordinary. So our practice of meditation, of coming into our body, opening and emptying our mind, and entering the intimate, inconceivable aliveness, not separate from anything. That's just so we could be a good citizen. This humble aspiration. And this has nothing to do, of course, with, you know, being a legal citizen or even an American citizen. I don't have anything in mind like that, and I'm sure Suzuki Roshi didn't either. I know some of you maybe are American citizens, and maybe some of you aren't. Maybe somebody's not a citizen of anywhere. The point is, by citizen, I think the feeling is, are you a good, am I a good and full participant in the life and the world that's around me? Not, are you like a fantastic, great person, but are you a full and good participant in the situation around you? A good citizen. And then there's a little, I don't know, charge, but energy or acupuncture point in this, like, American citizen. The American citizen seems to have some special responsibility, some special opportunity, given the great power, the enormous power that this country has, how impactful this country is. So this invitation that how I am in this place, in this body, how I live as an American citizen radiates and ripples and is part of what the country is. And that matters to lots and lots of people everywhere. So I want to say a little bit about the background behind Suzuki Roshi and his comment here in terms of his relationship with the United States and why he might have thought that it would be really good if the United States had good citizens. When the people of the United States are careless and cruel, the United States at war is a terrible, terrible thing that he knew intimately in his body. Born, I think, in 1904, died in 1971, was in Japan, of course, during the Second World War. During which time, you know, his country was totally devastated by the United States. You probably all know about the firebombing of Japan. Almost all their buildings are made out of wood. What if we send low airplanes over and drop bombs that start fires over 60 cities? Just devastated. And then, of course, the atom bombs. I imagine, you know, that someone experiencing that would have this prayer, just as I'm sure people all over the world have today, this wish and this prayer that citizens of the United States would be good, you know? Not great, special people with something to prove and fight over, but good. So I feel that little charge, you know. Even though by all accounts, everything Suzuki Roshi expressed his total love and devotion to this project of establishing American Zen and to these American Zen students that he encountered was totally all the way through transformed into just love and support. So he knew about the violence and the power of the United States. And in terms of the destruction of Japan, he really laid that at the feet of the Japanese nationalists. He didn't really blame, I don't see at least, in things that he said, where there was, I don't know what kind of resentment or not there was, but not a lot of blame for the United States. But the Japanese nationalists, he did not like. And it's not that the actions, it's not that their warlike actions were the point where he started not liking them. He understood that in this kind of nationalist thinking, there was something that was already totally destructive. Before even there was any weapon involved, this view, this way of thinking that Japanese nationalism was watering was deeply destructive. So here's what he says in an interview with Peter Schneider, who was an important early person at San Francisco Zen Center. He said, before the war, I had strong feelings against war. Before the government started to organize civilians against America, I organized young men in my area to have the right understanding of the situation of Japan at that time. We invited good people who actually participated in important activities in various areas of government, and we would ask questions until we understood them. Right? When's the last time we did that? So later, the government organized people to fight completely with America. But my purpose was not to prevent war, but to counter people who may have a one-sided view of the situation in Japan or in their understanding of ourselves and human nature. What is our understanding of ourselves, of human nature, you know, that unfolds into war? And what's our understanding of ourselves, of our nature, that unfolds into peace and love and harmony? So he says, I didn't have any big purpose for my group. I just didn't want my friends to be involved in that kind of nationalism, which I thought may destroy our Japan completely. It's more dangerous than war. We lost completely because of that lack of understanding. They didn't lose the war because they were out-strategized or outgunned. It was this, in his view, this lack of understanding. And then he says, I care more about the way of thinking, the fundamental way of thinking, which will cause big war. That is why I didn't like nationalists in Japan. Their view was very one-sided and very unrealistic, and they accused others of faults without knowing what they were doing. They actually created problems. So this sentiment, you know, I care more about the way of thinking, the fundamental way of thinking which will cause big war. This is what Zen practice is always pointing to, the fundamental way of thinking. It's not just about, you know, to be a good citizen, to be a good person, to practice compassion or wisdom or clarity. It's not just about, like, pruning actions that are manifest, actions in the surface. It's about inquiring into the deep layers of what we understand the situation of our life to be. Does that make sense? It's like too late. By the time there's anything, it's too late, at least for Zen. Maybe not too late for some other things. But Zen is about the view before there's an action. Just like here, you know, at Green Gulch, we farm as a core part of how we understand our offering. And you think farmers may be really into plants, which is true. Plants are kind of the point. And the way we take care of plants is by taking care of the soil. we take care of the soil. So our farming points to the soil, and our Zen practice points to the soil. What is our fundamental attitude, our fundamental way of thinking? Deep down at the bottom, you know, which is why we come into our body, we come into the silence and stillness. Open to what's here and notice, where is the separation? What is my view here of what this life is? And can I be humbled by this ungraspable presence? So to nourish our wisdom, our compassion, our virtue, we water the soil, we care for the soil, we nourish the soil. And we notice as we drop into presence. All of the views and thoughts about our life and each other that are extra, which are extra. All of our thoughts about our life, comma, which are extra. I had a teacher who was very emphatic about this point, and so I know it's important, but I never remember which is which. The point is not some of our thoughts and views are extra and some aren't. The point is thoughts and views are extra. All of them. This being alive right now has no handles, cannot be captured by any thought, idea, or view. Can we be humbled by that? Can we live in that ungraspable, intimate aliveness? That's tending the soil. And as we sit and open, we see all these views. Wow, look what I think of them. Look what I think of me. Look what I think the world is. Welcome. It's welcome. And it's released. It's returned to this soil of this being that can't be named or touched or separated from. We can't know anything about it because we can't step outside of it. So there's this famous passage that Suzuki Roshi sometimes referred to from Saicho, who's the 8th century Japanese founder of the Tendai school of Buddhism, which was kind of a source school for the Zen branch of Buddhism. And it's a line that's also sort of about being a good citizen. Saicho says, "One who can illuminate even one corner in the world is a national treasure." Who could make a museum big enough, you know? A big museum, maybe. Might be a smaller museum than we think. Of people, you know, treasures. Treasures of the nation, treasures of the Buddha Dharma, treasures of the world, treasures of humanity who can just shine, illuminate, clarify, make bright one little corner. Not a great person, but a good person, a good citizen, a good person in your corner. I'm too busy trying to be a great person for the world than to be a good person in my corner, you know, taking a lot of inspiration and clarity from this instruction or encouragement. Wondering, you know, yeah, how's my corner? How's my corner? How's our corner? the clarity, the composure, the confidence also of Zen practice, sitting in that presence that can't be grasped, not knowing what we are, you know. We don't have to worry too much that if it turns out that we're a bad person, you know. So we can wonder, how am I? Do you know what I mean? We don't have to be defensive because we're just life itself kind of feeling. You know what I mean? Anyway. If we're so caught up in being the right kind of person, then it's going to be hard for us to understand what kind of person we actually are. But when we have what we called refuge in Buddha, when we understand that what we are is not graspable or nameable or packageable by any kind of thought of view, then we can wonder, how am I doing, you know? And actually be open to whatever comes. Say thank you to whatever. And it might be better than we think. Are we open to that? Anyway, how's my corner doing? How's the light, you know, in my corner? These lights for a while, you know, until Timo came to the rescue. Kind of wobbly lights, you know. Or the shade on the lights with all the kind of dead bugs and dust and stuff. How's my corner over here? How's the lighting in my corner? And I'm sitting here wondering, you know, America is such a mess. And the world, you know, is so much suffering for so long, so deep, so broad, so terrible. Ah. How's the light in this corner? Not instead of that, not like, don't worry. We worry because we care, because we're not separate. But also, how's the light over here in this corner, in this moment, in this space? What are we bringing to our country, to our world, to each other? In this corner, be illuminated and clarified as brilliantly, as beautifully as it deserves. So Suzuki Roshi says about illuminating one corner. In everyday activity, you should be concentrated on what you do. It's a really important point for him. And concentration is like a funny word, because you might think it's something somebody else is good at that you're not good at. That's what most of us think of. That's what I think about concentration. Concentration, or that it's some kind of narrow focus, you know. Concentration for Suzuki Roshi is Zen concentration. It's the concentration of being, it's presence. It's wide open, embodied, letting go, and being what's here. It's a kind of concentration, but it's not narrow. It's about being present and fully with what's here. But it's concentration in the sense of, like, it's not being all gunked up in our mind thinking about all the other stuff that's other than what's here, or our body being all sort of like not unified, kind of unifying the body and the breath and the mind into wide presence. Yes, he calls that concentration, but maybe it could use that clarifying point. Or maybe that's just my own reminder. In everyday activity, you should be concentrated on what you do. In other words, so here's what concentration, what he means. In other words, you should greet people as if you were reciting a sutra, as though they were all Buddhas. So we chant in the mornings here at Green Gulch, we chant various sutras, including the Heart Sutra, with lots of devotion and energy, generally speaking. And it's difficult and wonderful, and this hall is very difficult to chant in. But we do it with our whole being, you know. But we say hello to each other. Do we say hello to each other? Do we greet people with the same devotion that we chant the Heart Sutra? Well, the Heart Sutra is very special. and this is just like some random person. I'm going to chant the Heart Sutra with my whole body and mind unified, my whole life present, open, here. But this person is like, hey, what do you need? Or like, get out of my way, you know? What are you doing here? Do you need any help? So what would that be? That's such a cool thing to say. What would that be to greet each person? Whether you're using words or you know, sometimes here we bow to each other, or even just the feeling when you come into the field of their embodiment, you know? To feel like you're reciting the sutra and saying, hey, hi. As though they were Buddha. Wouldn't it be amazing to meet Buddha? It's a little intimidating, but also kind of awesome. We could have that feeling for each other, like, I'm meeting Buddha. And sometimes your boss or your friend may not understand what you are doing. You're like quaking before them, right? Saying hello as though you're reciting the Heart Sutra. And they may not understand what you are doing. But even though they don't understand, you should practice in your own way with big mind. In city life, in this big world, wherever you go, people need you. If you have the right spirit, people need you. Without you, their life doesn't make sense. Wherever you go, people need you. If you have the right spirit, people need you. Without you, their life doesn't make sense. We say to shine one corner of the world. One corner, just one corner. So if you shine one corner, then people around you will feel better. That's such a nice line. People need you. You're not like extra. Says this kind of idea is very special to Japanese culture or East Asian culture. Buddha said to light up just one corner, not the whole world. Just to light up, to make it clear where you are. This is a very important point in our practice. It is enough if you shine the one corner of the world, one corner of the room. That is enough. Laughs, as the transcripts all say all the time, laughs. This kind of spirit may be difficult to understand. What is the spirit of shining one corner? But you know, if you sweep a square room, maybe you will sweep the middle only and not sweep the corner of the room. Laughs. When you wipe the floor or scrub the floor, you always leave the corners. More laughing. It is easy and it may be fast, you know, to leave the corners. You may think it is a better use of your time to clean two rooms instead of trying to clean each corner of one room. Maybe so. But we rather try to clean the one room completely with great difficulty, with great effort. It looks foolish, but someone must be foolish enough to spend all their life in cleaning each corner of the room. That is bodhisattva mind. Do you understand? Bodhisattva mind, including everything, this mind that includes everything, that cares for everything. We say, you know, the bodhisattva cares for others or something, but it's not like that. The bodhisattva cares for everything. Bodhisattva actually, the least thing that bodhisattvas care about is self and other. It's like the whole point of a bodhisattva. It's not about others instead of self. It's about caring for everything, including everything, and having this wish to support and liberate every single thing. It's not, again, that's not something special. That's just the innate posture of the human heart that's waiting to be met and revealed by each of us. So that is bodhisattva mind, to clean the corners. So So the question for us isn't just, you know, what are they doing? What are they doing to America? What are they doing over there? But what am I doing? What am I bringing? How am I a citizen? What America am I manifesting? What world am I manifesting? He continues, my teacher, Kishizawa Roshi, always after we would clean the room, he would come in and look around. You know, the frame of the shoji screen has many corners. You know, these Japanese doors with all the kind of cross pattern. It is rather difficult to clean up each of the squares of the frame. So sometimes we miss one. So he comes and looks around and he doesn't say anything. To shine one corner of the room. In the Lotus Sutra also, there is a famous bodhisattva who used to bow to everyone he met. Everyone. He bowed to everyone. He's laughing, by the way, the whole time he's saying this. He bowed to everyone. You may think that is very foolish, but that is bodhisattva mind. I remember Natalie Goldberg in one of her books talking about when she first started practicing Zen, she was like bowing to everything, going into the grocery store, you know, and bowing to the lettuces. That's bodhisattva mind. It's foolish. Foolish reverence and devotion for each thing. So, you know, sometimes we teach always in Zen, we're always in this complete or whole picture of what life is. And again, in the immediate being, as Suzuki Roshi says elsewhere, which I sometimes talk about, he says, don't think that you're part of the world. You're the whole thing. Also kind of funny view, but it's very true, very real in the sense of what our life is in this moment. This being here, you, what we call you, but anyway, the feeling of being alive in this moment is not like part of something else. It's the whole thing. There's no corner there. There's no corner there. You're it. You include everything. And yet, moment after moment, you know, from this other side, this conventional or relational side of our being, we're somewhere and not somewhere else. How are we caring for where we are? Do we understand that it matters how we're caring for where we are? So I want to say, don't want to go on too much longer, but a few more things that Suzuki Roshi says about this bodhisattva mind that I've been very moved by and want to share. You should always feel as if you are carrying an umbrella for people to help them keep away from the heat or the rain. You should always feel like you have an umbrella to hold over other people. It is rather difficult, you know, to take hold of an umbrella, but still, that is Buddhist giving. Without an umbrella to hold for others, we don't feel good, actually. It is not arrogant to hold an umbrella for others. We are too much involved in self-centered practice, self-centered life. So this holding the umbrella, this non-self-centered caring for others and having something to give to others is what feels good. And it's not arrogant. I mean, it can be. Running over and holding an umbrella over someone who's fine. No? Thank you. He's saying it's not about superiority or pity or like, I have an umbrella and I shall share it with you from my magnanimity. It's about not being self-centered. It's about living with this feeling of like, what's it time for? What's the offering? What can I give? There's no separation. It's just not self-concern. There's a story that I just came across, and David Chadwick has this wonderful book called Tassajara Stories about the first year at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center, one of the three temples of San Francisco Zen Center. along with Green Gulch and City Center. And he tells the story of Suzuki Roshi with his eventually to become Dharma heir, Bhikkhu Roshi. And they were getting on a plane to go to the East Coast for some events. And they were going into the plane. And I guess this was before you had a reserved seat. Or anyway, Richard Baker said, you know, the seats, in, let's sit in the back. That's where the safest seats are. And Suzuki Roshi, without missing a beat, said, well, then we should leave those for others. I just love that. It's not, and I don't know, I don't want to say, like, dwell on this too much. Because I don't think we need to be confused. But I worry that we're confused. We get so tangled. So many of us are so tangled in this dichotomy of self or others. Like, am I putting others first? Am I putting myself first? What about my safety? What, I want to be in the back of the plane. Okay. It's not about copying that or trying to be that. It's just that was Suzuki Roshi's actual first thought. It was like, well, if those are the good seats, why would I go to them? Who needs them? You know? Which, and maybe it is him. Maybe he's the one that needs them. But he's not assuming that. I never think that way. Do you ever think that way? I said, oh, yeah, good idea. Let's go sit at the safe seats, right? It's like, oh. He would also, like, always take the bad fruit, you know? But again, not from some punishing place, but just from, like, the joy of someone else will have the better fruit. I'm fine with the bad fruit, you know? Again, this can become toxic with just one little misalignment. But with the right alignment, this is actually the bodhisattva mind and is the way to live in joy and with satisfaction. So if we just see that little, like, toxic potential of the misalignment and then throw away this whole idea, then I don't think we'll be able to live with as much ease and joy in our life. Okay, then he tells a story. For example, this is an example of always being ready to hold the umbrella. For example, you know, Buddhists sometimes go out for takahatsu, begging rounds. So this is where they walk through town with their bowl, asking for support for the temple and for themselves, food or money. During wartime, sometimes I went on these begging rounds. And if I came across people who were digging a trench for a shelter from the bombs, I helped them. And he laughs. I'm not so strong, but I could help them dig for a little bit. And I transplanted cucumber or eggplants around the trench because we get, you know, good dirt from the trench. So he's walking, he's doing the alms rounds, he's walking with his begging bowl, he sees some people digging. What are you doing? We're making a trench for when the bombs come. And he says, sure, let me help. I'm not so strong, but I can help you dig. And then they're digging, and he's like, wow, this is pretty good soil. Why don't we, like, transplant some cucumbers and eggplant? So we planted cucumber around the trench. So sometimes I helped in that way. If they did not end up needing the trench, they could anyway eat cucumber. So I prepared cucumbers, a vegetable garden, and a trench below and the vegetables above. Just doing what it's time for, walking open, as Sekito Kisen says, right, in this poem that I've been sharing some, open your hands and walk. Open your hands and relax completely. Let go of hundreds of years. Sorry. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. He's ready always with the umbrella, always ready to do what it's time for, to support, to fully participate, to be a good citizen, to be engaged in the world around, not with some idea of, I'm going out, what am I going to be, how am I going to be able to help? But just with this openness. Actually, it was the opposite. He was there asking for support. It's always mutual. He's there asking for support, and then he notices, oh, you're digging. I guess we're digging now. This is good soil. Let's plant some cucumbers. Entering the interbeing, never departing from the interbeing. He continues, wherever you go, if you have this kind of attitude or this kind of feeling of holding the umbrella for others, you can help people quite easily. And sometimes people are, you know, sleeping, exposing their belly in the sun. Many people do this. So sometimes I help them to cover their belly. And they are very happy, you know, to see you, and they will help you too. If you have that kind of feeling, you have no trouble. If you have that kind of feeling, you have no trouble. And you can help people quite easily without anything. With empty hands, you can help people, and there is no need to give a lecture like this. That will be how you can help. So, again, he says, you know, sometimes I help them cover their belly. They're lying, they fall asleep. Ever happen to you? Fall asleep in the sun? He doesn't always cover their belly. He does what it's time for. He's in his body, empty mind, open heart, intimate with what's here. What's it time for? Maybe I'm not the one to cover that person's belly. Maybe they don't need their belly covered. But how am I fully participating, always ready, not self-centered, ready to support? And they are very happy to see you, and they help you too. Elsewhere he says, you know, you can't help somebody who's not helping you. If you are helping, if you're trying to help somebody and not aware that they're supporting you, it's not going to work. And that's another thing that frees us from the self-other thing. Am I helping them? Am I helping me? You can't help them if you're closed to that you're also receiving support from them. The help, the support comes from the intimacy that actually flows both ways. So you helping them is them helping you. So maybe that's enough. Thank you so much for your kind attention. This bodhisattva mind, you know, this mind caring for everything big and caring for illuminating with our innate wisdom and compassion, with the maturity that we already have in us, letting that come forth, letting that guide and organize our life. With this kind of feeling, we don't have trouble. It's a beautiful point that he makes. This bodhisattva mind cuts through all of the difficulty because it always knows what to do, you know? All of the trouble, all of the suffering is more opportunity for care, for love, for light. If you try to have some other practice of avoiding trouble, you know, might work sometimes, might not work sometimes. But the mind of the bodhisattva works all the time. It's the clarity that we can have all the time. How to care for what's here. How to illuminate. Participate in the illumination of this corner. Thank you. There's a few minutes if there's one or two questions or comments before we close. And Lime, Rekha, and then Lime.
Thank you. I have two questions, so you can do with them what you like, but thank you for lighting up your corner and giving this talk just in time for me. It feels like the first question is, I can't imagine a better place to live to be reminded of these things that you're talking about today and how I want to be in the world. And I noticed that about the time that I thought I knew what the job description for Eno was, or like what I'm supposed to do. I started tightening around it and kind of checking off and like corner, that corner, that corner, that corner. And so you've got me just in time, hopefully, to not keep rolling down that hill. And so I wonder, with so much reminders that we have here about Bodhisattva mind, what I can do about that checking off boxes or making sure slots are filled or things that are worth doing, or even like the corners of the shoji screen, like there's a way, you know, that anyway, that's the first question. And the second question is, yesterday morning we did the morning part of our monthly memorial for Suzuki Roshi, and I wondered if you could say a little something about that and why we like to do that, why we want to be there.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Reka. Reka is our Eno, head of the meditation hall. Many corners and spreadsheet corners and physical corners. So thank you for your practice. And it's not about having an idea, you know. Like this example, sometimes it really is time, you know, to just clean two rooms, kind of. You know. And so it's not about, you know, it's not about getting tight, as you say, around some idea about being thorough. It is about this mind and heart of including everything, of care. So thanks for taking up that reminder to be, and that the soil, the ground of where we're coming from, that presence, the way that our, the way that we're carrying, this is the soil part, right? The way that we're coming forward into the caring, like really matters. It's not just what we're doing, you know? It's how we're doing it. The body, the heart, the being that's engaged in the activity. So we're always pointing, as you say, all of the reminders of our practice, which I hope we all have in our everyday life, just reminders of the most important point of the deepest concern or inmost request of our heart for our life, that we're always reminded of that. We have, there's a long, very long tradition in Zen, you know, as old as Zen, of honoring the founders of temples, that the founder of the temple is like the conduit to the whole lineage of practice that's transmitted warm hand to warm hand over thousands of years. So we honor the founder and we preserve that tradition here. Again, not as the personality of him necessarily, but as this connection point, our connection point to the lineage that transmits and kind of brings forth this way of being and these teachings of life. So on the evening of the third and the morning of the fourth of each month, rain or shine, we bow to Suzuki Roshi. And declare our impossible wish for the teaching of this school to go on endlessly. May the teaching of the impermanence of all things go on without end, bringing ease and joy to beings. Thank you, Rika. Maybe one from Lime, and then I think we need to end.
Thank you so much, Jiryu. Always appreciate the reminder about, yeah, the corner that I'm in and how I can be in a space of enough stillness and calm to be able to actually give light to that corner. I think something I have struggled with in this tradition and is like this awareness of that interdependence, and that there are some corners where there's like actively like dust storms happening and like dirt being blown everywhere and actively creating a mess. And I'm not necessarily in that corner right now. And you keep saying this phrase that I love, which is like, do what it's time for.
Yeah.
So how would I know that it's time to leave the corner that I'm in? Or how would I know when it's time to be in one corner sometimes and be in another corner at other times?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. That's the practice of including everything. Embodied presence that includes everything. Part of when we you know, you're here, for example, you live here, and you live here for a reason. And you might get some idea about wanting to go help something, and that might be a beautiful and powerful idea, and it might be the right idea. And does it include everything? Does it include the whole field of, like, also what you need and what your life opportunity is and life situation is? So the problem of kind of charging off to go fix something somewhere else, that's not a problem. That's a beautiful thing. If it's time for that, you know, if everything is included, I think what happens is either way, when we get one-sided, we're cutting off some part because we're so distracted by the intensity of something. So then inside there's some intensity, so then we cut off the outside, or outside there's some intensity, so we cut off the inside. Can we be, as you say, present and calm and still and open to actually see the whole field, you know? What's my place in the web, in the net? And then to trust that and to keep that dynamic, keep that question open and not know. So may that just continue to be refreshed, you know, and come from authentic wisdom and compassion that includes everything. Sorry, I don't have more to say there, but I think being in that koan, that is the bodhisattva problem, you know. Where should we be? The old tradition says, you bodhisattvas, so committed to like saving all beings from suffering, how come you go into the forest to meditate? And we should worry about that. We should wonder about that. It's a really good question. And sometimes that's what it's time for. In that vow, you know. The charging off heroic to save, that's like great citizen territory. I love the Zen Peacemaker Order, you know, Bernie Glassman's inspired project on the East Coast, their principles, the three tenets. I'll just share this. Some of you know this. And then if this other comment is brief, we could get to it. The three principles are not knowing, bearing witness, and right action, which is a beautiful expression of this great activity of Zen. Doing what it's time for, or bodhisattva mind, or as Yinmen says, an appropriate response. Present, open, empty, here, doing what it's time for. So their thing is, you practice not knowing, but it matters where you are. So let's go somewhere where there's a big dust storm of suffering and violence and terror, and go sit there and practice this not knowing and this openness there. And then, but not know what we're going to do, not have anything in mind about what we're going to do. Just bring that not knowing into that place of suffering, and then let the action come from there. It's a beautiful practice. And so they do that as a deliberate practice, you know? Let's go somewhere hard and be in not knowing there and see, you know, if there's a garden to build around the trench. So I take inspiration from that, even as I keep feeling it's time to be here in this corner. Thank you, Lime. There was an emphatic hand over here, so maybe last one, and then we will, for real, end.
Thank you so much. My thought was, when you were talking about giving support or holding the umbrella over, what do you do when there's like an insatiable need, or like greed?
Yeah. Could you, thank you. It sounds like you have some practice with that. Do you have a word or some wisdom there?
Well, just like consumerism.
Oh, yeah.
The planet, you know, taking resources from the planet all the way down to like just my own self, feeling like I'm giving and holding the umbrella constantly for others.
I see, yeah. For, yeah. So I just, maybe I, thank you very much. It's a fundamental tension, and I want to be so clear. Let's just not, could we not do self and other for a minute? We could do it later. Let's do that tomorrow. People say it's really important, so how about tomorrow? We do self and other again tomorrow. The problem with self and other is like, we're going to have a different policy for other and for self, and that's not what bodhisattvas don't have self and other, and the feature of their not, one of the outgrowths of their not dwelling in self and other is that there's not a different policy for self and other. Some people have a different policy where self gets all the good stuff and other doesn't get anything. And some people have this twist because they realize how messed up that is. Then they have this twist of it's all about other and self doesn't get anything. Meanwhile, the bodhisattvas are saying, what are you talking about? There's things arising in this ungraspable field of being and they all need care. Who cares where they are? There's like some imaginary line. We don't need a different policy for the inside and outside of that line. What's it time for is, in this whole field, there's things arising. I guess a lot of them are like me related, but a lot of them aren't. And anyway, that doesn't matter. They just, what's it time? Where does the umbrella go? Yeah, this hatred, this tension, this frustration, this fear. Totally. Oh, your need, your wish, your, you know, trench that you're digging, your cucumber that you now need help peeling. It's not, it's seamless. It's continuous. And it's just taking care of what it's time for without worrying about whose it is. That's the everything included mind of the bodhisattva. Thank you very much for that. Really important question, and everybody for your kind attention today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by the San Francisco Zen Center. Our programs are made possible by the donations we receive. Please help us to continue to realize and actualize the practice of giving by offering your financial support. For more information, visit sfzc.org. and click giving. May we fully enjoy the Dharma.